So we have a familiar face back. Anson, how are you?
Doing all right yourself?
Well, not too bad. Me and Alston missed you for the last couple of episodes. Just the two of us trying to record some of these pods. But we're happy that you're back. But unfortunately, Alston's not back this week. It's just going to be me and you this week.
I don't know until we're happy if I don't see the other one.
Well, I'm gonna. I know I hate speaking for Olsen, and he hates if I speak for him, but I'm sure he's glad that you're on the pod this week. He actually made it through 151 episodes, I think. Like, he hasn't missed an episode until today.
Well, no, he missed one prior, right? About 6 months ago.
Did he? I don't remember. I always remember, like, he was at every episode. And like, if there was ever an episode where, he couldn't do it, like, we ended up just, postponing it. Was there, like, I'll have to look back. Do you remember, like, what specific episode that was?
I'd say around July, August is my guess.
Okay, maybe I'll have to look this up. So maybe I'm wrong about him having a streak of 151 consecutive pods, but 151, that's not that great. Keith Yandel. His Iron Man streak of how many games was it? 989 games. I think that's quite amazing. It's kind of shitty about how it ended, though. Am I right?
Well, so it started in March 26, 2009, and it ended March 29th, 2022. So that already in itself is hella impressive. But I can kind of see why they did it in the sense that he's like 35. They signed him for like offensive and power play opportunities, kind of things, right? And the Flyers are out of the playoff contention, odds are, right? So, giving the young guys more ice time, seeing what they can do. Oh, and I get, giving him the 11 more games for 1,000, but I feel like they kind of did him a favor just getting him to break the record.
Well, he had broken the record earlier in the season. It was Doug Jarvis's, I think it was like 964, I want to say. But to me, I don't know how I feel about it. I guess I have two thoughts on it. My first thought was like, holy smokes, 989 games. Like, he was healthy for that long. I completely agree with you, right? Like, if you are Philadelphia, you want to give your younger guys some playing time. And I think guys like Cam York is someone that they're hoping to maybe develop. So they didn't really need like a guy who's just going to be a power play specialist. Even though he's a veteran presence, I think they had to make that decision to give their younger guys time to play. But I guess my second thought and the biggest thought was like, why does benching someone, why is that considered as like that stops him from having a consecutive game streak, right? Like in my opinion, right? Like, I don't know. It just feels weird that that's allowed to be considered as a way to like stop someone's consecutive game streak.
And I kind of get where you're coming from, because if you look at the like current NHL records, it's some of the guys on it, like the active ones. I want to say like I saw Gus Nyquist on it at like 160 something like that, and I know he's been out for a season minimum, right? He had a surgery a couple years ago. Yeah, there it is, 161. And he's 19th, but he was out for like a whole season, so it's kind of like skewered. And how that goes, but I think you like stepping on the ice, playing one shift counts. I don't think being in the press box counts as a game played because you're not playing per se.
I guess, but like, I wonder, like, I didn't want them to do. I don't know how much you're into baseball, but do you know like the Cal Ripken Jr. story?
Refresh me about that one.
If I remember correctly, he was also going for the consecutive game streak, and he was basically, I think, if I remember correctly, like, he was even healthy, But they basically gave him an at bat, so it sounded like he played the game, and then that's how he broke the record. Like, I think he came in the fifth inning as a pinch hitter, or something, fifth or sixth. Like, once that game was confirmed to be like a complete game, it wasn't going to be like postponed or anything. I think they gave him the at bat or something, and then that like made him have like a 2,000 consecutive game. So like it was like maybe it wasn't 2,000, but like it was some like really dumb way of getting him to like have a huge record. Like I wonder, like if you're Mikey or the Flyers, would you not be like, hey, I will let this guy skate a shift up until you get to 1,000, right? Like 989, I feel like they, I'm trying to think, like, is there even enough games to make it to 1,000 for the end of the season?
Oh, that's a great question. But here's the thing, though. For Ripken, baseball is different, where you can just kind of play, you know, you can play as a pinch hitter and then get subbed out again. That's for one at bat, it's whatever. But for hockey, you can't just play, Yano for one game or one shift, because that, I feel like, kind of just you're shorthanded for the rest of the game. You have one guy playing one shift, and then you ice, 17 guys, essentially. That's just, I don't think that's good for team morale, and I don't think that's good for, I think, the player in general. Like, that the only reason he's dressed is to step on the ice for about 10 seconds.
I know, but if you're the Flyers, aren't you trying to, you know, tank and get a better pick, right? Like, this season's a lost season, like you said. They might as well be tanking, but, you know, I digress. I think that's, like, that'd be a shitty way. Like, if he was, like, really hurt, and, like, he just needed, to hit, like, 1,000 games or something, I think you would do that then. But, like, if he's already broken the mark, I guess 1,000, like, he could have reached it this season, but, to me, like, I think it would be weird, though, if Yandel plays another game this season. Because, like, you don't sit a guy out for one game and then bring him back and then, like, destroy his streak like that. I feel like if Yandel plays another game, it just makes this all the more weirder, I would think.
No, and I agree with that. It's once you sit him, once you make the decision to sit him, you don't put him back on the ice. It just doesn't make sense, especially like I said, you're giving the younger guys an opportunity to play, and then you go, hey, Keith Andrew, we're going to have you sit, give them a chance, but if they don't work out, then you got to go back in. That's not how that works, right?
I mean, he is a minus 39 on the season, so he's a third line guy, like, I kind of get it. Like, maybe you should probably be sending him. And I think, yeah, if he plays another game, it ruins it all. But, you know, we're hoping, like, unlike Keith Yandel, hopefully Olsen comes back next week. Or I don't think we're going to sit him for too long. I don't think the star of our podcast will be able to stay on the sidelines for too long. And with that, let's start the show proper, shall we?
You're listening to the Bag of Pucks podcast, part of the National Podcast Network.
And we are back. So I think the big news this week, I don't know, did you see the Zegras goal this week?
I saw the replay of it, yeah.
Like, at this point, do we stop calling it the Michigan and we call it the Zegras?
Well, where did the whole Michigan originate from, per se?
I want to say it was like a University of Michigan player who did it first, and that's why it's called the Michigan. Like, I think that's where it originated. Like, I mean, I think a lot of people call it like a lacrosse style goal, because like we see that mainly in lacrosse. But I think it's like the nickname is the Michigan is because someone at the University of Michigan was the first one to ever do it. But I might be right. I might be wrong.
No, you're right. So University of Michigan's Mike Legg with 2 G's, who scored the first lacrosse style goal in the 1996 NCAA tournament.
Okay. So, yeah, I think that's why it's called the Michigan. But I feel like at this point, right, like Zegras has 2 NHL goals of him doing the lacrosse style goal. I feel like at this point, you just call it the Zegras. Or if you're Trevor Zegras, change your middle name and call yourself Trevor Michigan Zegras or something like that.
I think if he does it for more and more, yeah, it's going to catch on as the Zegras. I think, yeah, doing it twice, incredibly impressive, because like, when was the last time we saw it? No, it was by him, right? But I think you can't coin the term, unless you kind of coin it as like the Kucherov, the no deke move. But I think most people still call it like the no deke move, right? You don't really call it the Kucherov per se.
No, like I feel like these players, like the greatest players, always have like their signature moves. I think, like, if I think about Crosby, I think about the one hand backhands, or just a backhand that he just roofs every single time. You have Ovechkin's one timer from the left faceoff circle. You have the Kucherov, and like, this is the Zegras, right? Like, I feel like at this point it's special enough that like it's. Well, it's different enough between like what Ovechkin and Kucherov and Sidney Crosby do that I think it's unique enough that you can call it the Zegras at this point.
I think it's basically the Zegras without acknowledging it, just in the scenario that it happens twice, like say a year, versus, you know, Crosby's back end that happens like once every other week, or Ovechkin from his office every other day. It just, I think the more this happens, the more that people are going to lobby for this to be called the Zegras, but as of right now, I don't think so yet, but I think it's going to work up to that.
I think the craziest part of this goal, like for those who haven't seen it, you just got to search it up on YouTube. Like, I think this is the first time it's been on the glove hand, because Vemelka's he's a right-handed catching goalie. Like, I think this is the first time where it's been on like the goal, like the glove side, because it's always like on the blocker side, and like the goalie's trying to like bring the shoulder up because like they're down already, but like, or I mean they're up, but like I feel like this is the first time it's gone glove side. I don't know if you've seen any other like lacrosse style goals, but to me that, I think that was the most different, because I always thought like, you know, with the glove side you could probably like get to the puck a little bit better than going blocker side, but I guess it doesn't matter when it's Trevor Zegras.
Nor should it, but I think it was an incredible goal, and the game ended 5-0, but he scored, I would say, the dagger, realistically. It was still in the first period. He made it 3-0 with that kind of goal. That was just, I think, demoralizing for the rest of the Coyotes.
Well, and I think we know who it demoralized the most, and I think that's Jay Beagle. Like, another thing, if you just happen to be looking up that Zegras goal, you should also look up the... what happened between Jay Beagle and Troy Terry. And I think we have different perspectives. I think in general, people are labeling Beagle as public enemy number one in Anaheim. Then there's people like Tyson Nash who are on board with not on board, but are sympathetic of what Beagle did. I don't know if that's the right word, but what's your take on this, Anton? Like, do you like what Beagle did, or are you against it?
I can see why Beagle did it. I don't agree with it, because from when I was looking at the replay and stuff, Troy Terry's gloves are still on. This is just like a one-sided, like, it's one-sided from Jay Beagle the entire time. And I get that, I want to say Zegras poked at the goalie, Beagle, what's it called, cross-checked him from behind, and then Troy Terry stepped in, but at no point was Terry trying to fight. I think he was just trying to wrestle him away from the whole scrum. And if you look at the aftermath, it's the left side of, I want to say, Terry's face is just bloody and bruised. And just, like, he literally took a beating, even though he didn't throw a single punch.
Well, do you fault Terry at that point? Because if you're jumping in at that point and you know it's Beagle, you should get your gloves off, right? Like, you shouldn't just turtle and hope for the best, right? Like, if you're jumping into a scrum like that, you should expect to, you know, take some punishment, and you should also be, you know, be ready to give some punishment as well.
But I don't think Terry's point was to fight him. I think he was just trying to get him away from the whole scrum and like not escalate any further. It's already 5-0, right? It's the game's over. Everyone knows that. So that fight was, like, quote-unquote fight, was pointless from every perspective.
I feel like context was really important here too, right? Like, the Ducks are away. Like, the Coyotes are at home. They're being embarrassed 5-0. And, like, at this point, if you're the Ducks, you shouldn't be trying to instigate anything. So, yeah, the puck's being covered. You don't put a stick in there, right? You don't try to poke at the puck when the goalie's got cover. I think the Ducks are just at fault for what happened, because I think, like, if, you know, the whistle is blown and, you know, everyone just gets ready for the next phase out, I feel like none of this happens. But, like, why did you feel like you're not at home or anything? You're already up 5-0. It's 6 minutes left in the third. Like, the game is practically over, like you said. Like, they didn't need to instigate anything. And because they instigated an incident, Jay Beagle, as what Jay Beagle does, is ready to, you know, motivate his team. And, like, I don't know. I feel like it's Jay Beagle maybe went a little bit over, was a little bit too harsh. But at the same time, I think this is something expected in hockey culture that's going to happen. And, you know, you better be prepared for it.
Yeah, but he literally came in from behind, cross-checked him, and then beat the other guy up. And it's, 5 minutes left, like you said, nothing's happening. Yeah, but I don't think he had the puck fully covered. That's why you're poking for it. Lose puck, you score, cool, whatever. Right? So the whole Jay Beagle basically cross-checked from behind, beat Troy Terry senseless. I get it. Ducks shouldn't have done that, but the whistle wasn't blown at that point. So it is kind of fair game to keep poking at the glove or at the puck, whatever.
Yeah, no, I guess maybe, like, you're expecting maybe a face wash at that point, but you're not expecting a cross check from behind and, like, being smacked face first into the ice, almost like that. Like, I don't know. I still feel like if you're Troy Terry there, like, you're stepping up for Zegras at that point, you need to expect that, like, you're there to protect your teammate, right? So that doesn't mean you just try to pull the guy away. I think you need to, you know, be a little bit more responsive than, you know, just not taking your gloves off. Like, I think, you know, at that point, when you're committing into that scrum, like, with 5 minutes left, game over, you're probably getting misconduct. Like, you might as well just leave it all on the ice. And I feel like it was an unfair fight, but I feel like Terry probably could have put up a little bit more of a fight. Like, I don't think it was unexpected that Beagle was going to dish out some punches at him.
No, but like I said, I don't think it's not unexpected. I think that the whole time, looking in the replay, Terry's grabbing by the neck and, like, just kind of, like, holding him, like, trying to hold him in place, where, like, he didn't even throw a single punch. So it's more like he's trying to restrain him from doing any more damage, but at the same time, he's eating all these punches. At no point is this kind of like, hey, Troy Terry, the enforcer. This is kind of like the Troy Terry, I'm gonna try and dissolve the situation as best as I could. And for that, he got the crap kicked out of him.
Yeah, no, fair. I don't know. I always thought Troy Terry was like, what's it called? Like a power forward. But I don't know. I don't know why I ever thought that. But I always considered him a power forward. But I guess he wasn't really in that situation. But yeah, I think that was like kind of like the big event of the week. But I don't know. I guess, like, another big thing that happened this week, I guess, since we are kind of based in, well, you're based in Toronto, I'm based in Ontario, I guess, Matthews scoring 50. Like, when was the last time someone scored 50? I'm trying to remember. I'm pretty sure it was Ovechkin, right? But, like, it's been a while since, because of, like, the pandemic, shortened seasons and everything.
Well, Matthews almost hit 50 last year against the whole Canadian division, I'd say. But off the top of my head, I would say, yeah, I think it's Ovi. I think it would be Ovi who scored the last 50-plus goals. And I want to say Matthews is the first Leafs center in franchise history to hit 50, because I think all the rest were kind of wingers back in, like, the 70s and 80s.
I'm pretty sure Rick Vive was a center, but don't quote me on that, because I'm pretty sure he has a Leafs record. I think it's 54, but I think he was a center, but I might be wrong. But yeah, like it's been a while since someone scored 50, and like I think the fact that there hasn't really been like a full season in a while has kind of made it a little bit harder for people to score 50. And you know, it's good for him to get 50. I think an empty net goal was kind of, I don't know, it was kind of, I'm trying to think of the word, but it was kind of like a boring way to get to 50. But like, it doesn't seem like it's going to be too hard for him to get to like 60 soon.
So looking at it, sorry, I'm going to go back a second. It's like Rick Vibey, maybe Gary Lehman and Dave Anderchuk. They're the only guys to score 50 goals in the season. And for what I can see, the rest of them are wingers. Per like Wiki and all the other sites that we got.
Yeah, I think Lehman was a winger. I know Anderchuk was probably a center. I think that was also the season. Was that the season he like played half with Toronto and half with Buffalo? Or like I remember Anderchuk scored like 50, like playing for two different teams. He got traded like the deadline. I digress. Like 50 goals, that's quite crazy. I think he's gonna hit 60. Maybe I don't know if he's gonna hit 60. Maybe the two, I wonder that 2-game suspension, if that stops him from getting up to 60.
He's got about what to say, 10, 11 games? No, more than that. It's only, he only hit it in like 60. So yeah, I think he could definitely hit 60, but you're right. That, what, 2-game suspension from the Harris Classic, or I think whatever it was just, that might be the difference between like 58, 59. To even like 60.
Like, how pissed would you be if you're Austin Matthews? Like, I think that the suspension was fine, but I think like personally, you think like if you're Matthews, right, you're like, okay, that wasn't supposed to be a like a 2-game suspension, and if this prevents me from scoring 60 goals, I'm gonna be like, I'm come back with a vengeance or something like that. Like, I don't know. I feel like there's probably himself and probably internally in the Leafs organization, they're probably like, they feel cheated if he doesn't hit 60.
Well, so the Leafs have 14 games remaining. Matthews needs another 9. And to give you a context, the remaining games is against Tampa, Florida, Dallas, Montreal, Buffalo, Washington, Ottawa, New York Islanders, Philly, Tampa, Florida, Caps, Wings, and Bruins. So there's a few teams there where I can see him score multiple goals.
So you mean at this point, if we're playing the Tim's Hockey Challenge, if Matthews' name pops up, we have to pick him every single time because he's probably going to hit 60, and you know, his goal per game ratio is like ridiculous at this point?
Essentially, the 51-63, that's, I mean, when was the last time we saw someone with nearly a goal, a game, like progress? Ovi, Stamkos back then?
I mean, Stamkos, he had 60 and 82 in 2011-2012. So about, is that like 10 years ago? Ovechkin had 65 and 82. I think if you're talking about like exactly like a goal per game, like even close, like you gotta go back to like the Gretzky areas, the Lemieux, the Bobby Hulls with, you know, 70 goals a season. But like, I get what you mean. Like, it's hard to score in the NHL, and like hitting 50 is quite amazing. If he hits 60, I think that's going to be just awesome. Like, it's just so rare that we haven't seen it for such a long time. I think a lot of people are going to be cheering for Matthews to hit 60. And I guess another guy hit a milestone, and a guy, you know, I don't know if you've heard of him, Connor McDavid, he also hit 100 points this week as well. I don't know. What do you think is more like crazier, like hitting 100 points or hitting 60 goals or 50 goals?
I think with the current AHL, I think hitting 50 goals is a harder achievement than hitting 100 points. How about you?
No, I agree with you. Like, I think 50 goals is, you know, definitely a statement. Like, I think even 40 goals is quite hard, right? Like, I think it's easy to get a point a game. It's harder to get, you know, even like a goal every 2 games seems like quite hard. Like, I want to say that there's probably more, there's probably more people with 100 points in a season than there are people with 50 goals in a season. So I kind of see that a little bit, but I mean, still with like McDavid, like 100 points, I think that's still like quite ridiculous. Like there's been seasons where like no one hits 100 points, and here we have McDavid with, you know, still 10-ish more games left, and he's already hit 100 points. Is quite ridiculous. And like, I mean, at the time of this recording, I don't know, like Leon Draisaitl could be joining him very soon, hitting 100 points as well.
Yeah, just to like, I guess, further my point of, I think 50 goals is a bit more impressive than a 100-point season. Well, McDavid has 102, Draisaitl has 99, Huberto has 96, Gaudreau has 92. And, you know, last year wasn't as close, I want to say, but this year Draisaitl has 49 goals, Kreider has 46, and then Ovi and Connor has 42 and 41 respectively. So it's like, I think from my perspective, I don't know, man. The last year, Matthews almost hit 50 in a very shortened season, and McDavid went on an absolute tear. So like last year, I think McDavid would have the edge in terms of who'd be more valuable to their own franchise. But I think this year, I think if McDavid hits like, you know, 130 in the last like 10, 15 games of the season, that's a different story. But the way that's going, I think if Matthews hits 60, I think that is a more impressive feat.
I guess that brings up, like, if you thought, okay, if you were thinking about like the Hart Memorial Trophy, do you think the Art Ross winner wins it more often, or do you think the Maurice Rocket Richard winner wins the Hart Memorial more often?
Well, I guess that would depend, though, right? Like, how many points is the Art Ross guy getting versus how many goals is the Richard winner getting, right? And most of the time, it's the Art Ross.
And you're right. Like, I think I could be wrong. But like, if you look back at the history, well, like the most recent history of the Hart Memorial, I think there's like, okay, let's not count Carey Price. Let's not count that Taylor Hall debacle. Like, if you're looking at the previous winners of the Hart Memorial Trophy, every winner was the Art Ross winner, except for last time it was not the Art Ross winner, was 2012-2013. And that was Ovechkin. And I think that was like a shortened season. He almost like, he was also on a goal scoring tier. He was second in points, but like that was the last time we had like a non-Art Ross winner who was not, like, I don't know. Like Taylor Hall, that was a weird season because it was another shortened season and like New Jersey kind of came out of nowhere and made the playoffs. So I think that's why they gave it to him over McDavid. But like, if we're looking like genuine, like trophy races, I think like last time it was a Rocket Richard winner over Art Ross winner was Alex Ovechkin. So, but like, I agree with you. Like, it depends on how many goals. It depends on how many points to determine who wins the Hart.
Yeah, like I can't think of. I remember when like, I think Jimmy Benn won the Art Ross, but I don't remember what season that was specifically because I think he only had like 88 points. Versus whoever the winner was. Was that the Carey Price year?
I am currently checking that. I want to say yes, it was. Carey Price won the Hart in 2014-2015, and Jamie Benn won the Art Ross that same year.
Yeah, so that's kind of what I'm saying. It's, you know, Jamie Benn had a great season, don't get me wrong, with like 89 points in, or sorry, 87 and 82, but I don't think that was as spectacular as the season that Carey Price had that year.
Do you think that we should just be renaming the Hart Memorial Trophy instead of like the most valuable player? Should it not just be like the most valuable forward? Because it's like, it's so hard for, like, it doesn't make sense for a goalie to win it because there's like the Vezina. It doesn't make sense for a defenseman to win it because there's already the James Norris. So like, should the Hart Memorial just be renamed like the top forward? Because like, I feel like only forwards win it, right? Like Carey Price was an abnormality for winning it. The last defenseman to win it was Chris Pronger, and that was in a different century, back in 99, 2000. Like, at this point, should we just not be giving it to the top forward?
Well, you also see Jose Theodore, 2001, 2002.
I know, I was talking about defenseman, so I skipped that. But yes, yeah, Theodore also won it. I don't think he even had that great of a season. But like, if you look at the history of like winners for the Heart, right, it's almost always been, you know, a forward. So like, I feel like at this point, like, we know it goes to a forward. Like, if there's ever a defenseman in conversation for the Heart, like, we know it's just like as a, it's a red herring. It's not an actual, like, they're not an actual nominee, I think. So I don't know.
It's kind of like a participation medal in a sense. It's like, hey, you're here, but you know you're not going to win it.
Kind of, but like, they probably are, if they're being nominated for the Heart, if you're a defenseman, you probably are already won the James Norris. So I think it's just kind of like a courtesy. But like, I feel like we talked about, like, I think the trophy race for the Heart, it's going to be interesting between McDavid and Matthews. I think, I mean, if, are there any defensemen you think are in the race for the Heart, or are they just going to have to settle for the Norris this year?
What do you think about, say, Makar or even Josi?
I think that's like the great debate, right? Like, Makar versus Josi. Like, Makar is having a great season and Josi is too, but like, Makar's got all the points and everything. And like, I don't know. Like, I think they've been giving it to a guy with like a lot more points and like playing a lot more games. And like, I think both Josi and Makar have been pretty healthy, but like, Makar is over a point per game, and I think that's rare for defensemen. So I feel like he gets the Norris over Josi, but I feel like any other year, Josi would completely deserve the Norris. How about you?
I'm gonna throw this curveball to you right now. So I see Makar has 24 goals, 51 points. Oh, sorry, 51 assists for 75 points. Okay. Josi has 18 goals, 63 assists for 81 points. He's got more points than Makar. The only difference is Makar has a few more goals.
Oh, I completely did not see that. I think it's going to come down, right? Like, if Makar hits 30 goals, I think then you have to give it to Makar. But like, if it ends up like Makar doesn't hit 30 goals and they're about the same amount of points, I wonder if Josi gets it instead. Like, I feel like as great as Makar has been, I think when you look at how, like, Makar is pretty insulated in Colorado. So I feel like you got to give to Josi because he actually plays, you know, a little bit. He has a little bit more like defensive responsibilities than Makar, I find.
Yeah, I think in that scenario where Makar, I think from you and I's perspective, they have more, I guess, defensemen in a sense, or like, he's got more partners who can cover him on certain situations, or like 3-on-3s. You know, you go to overtime, you'll let Makar go nuts. He's basically like a third forward, but you'll see most of the time he has to go. He can't join the rush because perhaps his defenseman is not as defensive minded per se, or that Josi is just, I think, his bigger responsibility in terms of like dragging the Preds to the playoff spot. Whereas I think even without Makar, the Avs are a very, very solid team in the playoffs.
I'm trying to find some stats here, and I don't know if maybe, like, I feel like Makar doesn't get like the hardest defensive assignments, but I feel like Josi is more likely to. Like, they both have like good second pairs, like between Colorado and Nashville, they've got the good second pairs where they can let, you know, a Josi or a Makar like have like more offensive freedom. But like, I feel like Nashville, they're more okay with giving, you know, Josi the secondary assignments. Like, they give like Ekholm and whoever he's playing with at that time like a harder like opposition. But like, if you're Colorado, I feel like it's been fairly equal. Like, if you need like a shutdown pair, it's normally like not Makar. It's like they give it to someone else. But like, I don't know. I think it's a tough race. And, like, you always know if Victor Hedman can always sneak in and somehow, you know, steal the Norris from them for some reason. But I do agree. I think it's similar to the Hart. It's like a two-horse race. It's going to be either Makar or Yossi.
Yeah, I mean, I just did some quick look. But, like, I think he has 28 points in – or, sorry, Yossi had 28 points in the month of March alone, which is more than I'd say – some of the guys have an entire season. And I think for me, that I think that kind of puts him a little ahead of Makar and Hedman currently, where I think without him, I don't think the Preds are in the playoffs or even like kind of itching in that area. Because they're what, fourth? 39, 25, and 4. They're a game roughly ahead of the Stars. But without him, I don't think they'd be where they are right now.
No, I agree with you on that point. I mean, like, in the end, like, if we're saying, like, Yossi or Makar, who would be, like, the more deserving Hart nominee, I think I agree with you. It would be Yossi. But I think there's still quite a few games left. I feel like Colorado might tone it down a little bit because they pretty much got first locked up. Like, they've got home ice advantage locked up in the West. So I feel like they might kind of cool the engines a little bit. Nashville, they're still not, like, for sure, you know, 100% going to be in that divisional spot. So I feel like they're going to be a little bit more competitive. So I feel like we'll see Yossi maybe put a little bit more points. But, you know, I think either person is going to be deserving. I feel like all these star players are always deserving of these awards. It's just that some years, like, someone might be just as good as you, and then you end up being a very, very close second to winning that award. I think maybe the Vezina maybe is a little bit going to be a little bit different. Maybe we'll talk. We'll save the Vezina for next week. I think in terms of our trophy talk, I feel like we're going to hear Alston talk about Jonathan Quick quite a bit. So maybe we'll just hold off on that until next week. But is there anything else you want to talk about there, Anson?
No, I think I'm good for this week. And you know him. He's going to say it's Kyle Peterson, not Jonathan Quick. But, you know, go ahead.
Well, he'll probably say that both Cal Peterson and Jonathan Quick should be both Vezina nominees, and they should be like joint winners of the Vezina because they're so good and everything. But like, we're missing Alston this week, so I feel like I need to step up to the plate and, you know, ask you a very, very important question there, Anson. Who should be paying on a first date? Should it be... Maybe I'm digging myself into a hole here.
No, go ahead.
Should the guy or the girl, or yeah, actually no, I'm not even defining it. Who should be paying on a first date?
So I guess it depends on the scenario. It's like if you agreed upon like prior, then you know you go with that. Like whatever you go, I pay, then you know I'll pay. Or say you get the dinner and then your partner gets the dessert or the movies or whatever, kind of split it in a sense. Or if you, again, you talked about it beforehand, then you just split the entire first date. You pay for half, your partner pays for half. Done. Nice and simple. It depends on how, you know, or how you, the date kind of goes too. It's like, you know, if you guys agreed beforehand, yes, let's do whatever we want. But at the same time, it's depends how closely you are to this person. Are you like friends with them prior, or or do you just meet them?
Let's say this is the first time, like you're not like close acquaintances, you're like you kind of just met, like let's say you met them through like an online dating app.
Yeah, so let's just say I'll grab the dinner and hope they get the like the drinks or the dessert after, whatever. If they don't, whatever.
That was like a very adult answer. Like, I don't know if you've heard me and Alston's when we have these stupid questions, it's always very hectic. But you know, your answer is very like adult. It makes us sound so much more mature than me and Alston when we try to answer these questions. But no, I think I'm kind of in agreement with you. But like, how would you initiate, right? Like, how do you be like who's the one who initiates that conversation about whether they should be splitting half or like should he be paying? Like, is that not a question that happens when the check or the bill arrives?
So you go, hey, can I get the bill please? And they go, Would you like to split it or like one bill? And I would say just go, yeah, I'll take one bill. And then they go, let's split it. You go, hey, you know what? We can get dessert after or something. You can deal with that.
So if it's not, if the date's not going well, do you automatically say you split or do you just suck it up? I mean, would you suck it up and be like, okay, I'll pay for it. And, you know, maybe this is just a one-off and, you know, we're not doing a second date.
Well, it also depends. If you order like one thing and the other person orders like four drinks and a whole like lobster meal, yeah, I'm not paying for that. That's like four times the amount of my meal. That's a little too much. But let's say it's equally. Yeah, I'll just pay for the, like, it's like a burger and like one drink, whatever. It's not going to break your bank or anything.
You know, you sound very mature. Why don't you give our listeners some etiquette, some dining etiquette tips on your first date? I think you could provide a wealth of knowledge to our listeners. I feel like your answers are so mature. So like, it seems like we should be asking you more of these questions. You know, provide us your wealth of knowledge of all this.
Is this a one question a pod, or is this like a multiple questions? Because we usually do one at a time.
Well, your answer has been so delicate and adult-like. I'm not even asking you a question. I'm just asking you to provide advice to our listeners about what's the perfect date etiquette for a first date, like in terms of like if you're going out for a meal.
There is no specific date etiquette. You just go, hey, you want to eat here? Cool. You eat food, you talk, and then you get the bill. And they say you split, then you go, hey, let's split, sure, whatever. And then if you get dessert, you just get dessert. If they want to split again, cool. And then you go about your ways.
Okay, I guess maybe it wasn't going to be as mature of an answer as it was before. I was thinking
no, because like, it depends, right?
No.
It depends what you're doing on your first day or your date with the other person.
No, fair enough. I was just thinking, because like before you were saying like, oh, like it would have been decided before about who pays on like the first date. But then at the same time, it almost always happens right as the bill is coming or when the waiter or waitress asks you, is it one bill or do you split the bill? Or is it that awkward moment where the waiter or waitress just gives you one bill and you just look at each other and be like, who pays? Or
no, if they give you one bill without asking, just take it. Unless it's like I said, your meal is $20 and their meal is like $150, then yeah, you go, you pay your portion, I pay mine, because I'm not paying six times the amount of my meal.
So I guess another tip you have then is to make sure that if you're going to be ordering food with someone and you're thinking about, you know, not splitting the bill, like only one person paying, you guys should probably order similar amounts with your meal so that, you know, one person isn't being too bougie compared to the other person.
I also presume the other person is not going to be like, I am getting a free meal, I will order everything on the menu.
I don't know. A free meal sounds pretty good to me right now.
It sounds like you should go on the dating apps and find something like that.
Maybe I will. And with that, that's pretty much the end of our episode. Do you have any final thoughts there, Anson?
I think you almost called me the Olsen, but no, I think I'm good for this week.
You know, it's hard when I have two co-hosts whose names differ by one letter. Like they're not as unique as me, whose name starts with a G and not an A. So it hits me sometimes where I have to like really concentrate about who I'm talking to. But, you know, it's been great having this pod with you, Anton. I feel like this was the only pod that's just been me and you, but, you know, maybe there's more to come. Maybe, who knows? Hopefully Olsen's back next week, but if not, our listeners are just going to be stuck with me and Anson again. And with that, we'll talk to you guys next week.
Thanks for listening to the Bag of Pucks podcast, part of the National Podcast Network. You want to complain about us? You can tweet us at BOP_POD on Twitter. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you soon.